Hello, friends. Welcome to the Mosaic Life Podcast. My name is Trey Kaufman, and through these conversations, I have the chance to share stories of personal growth and struggle, happiness, and overcoming grief. The Mosaic Life Podcast is a podcast on demanding the very best for ourselves each and every day. If you enjoy this episode of the Mosaic Life Podcast, I would ask for only one thing in return, and that's for you to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I'll be completely honest, writing this introduction today is a bit of a challenge. My guest overcame immense grief to share her story with the world and this conversation with you. But that's not why she's here. She's here because of the incredible kindness of one total stranger in a country foreign to her, and how one simple act completely changed her life. How that act saved her life. Whether or not you're a parent, whether or not you've suffered a horrible loss, there is one thing in this world that can help others through hard times, that can bring us together when we couldn't feel farther apart. And that's kindness. Lara Formentini is a San Francisco-based author, nonprofit photographer, and activist who has worked with countless NGOs from around the world and with seemingly ordinary people who have accomplished the extraordinary. In the summer of 2019, Lara's life hit a turning point when her son died by suicide. She now shares her story on how a random act of kindness from a complete stranger has helped her to heal, and how she is paying the stranger's kindness forward with her book. I'm thrilled to welcome my new friend to the podcast, Lara Formentini. Welcome. How are you? I appreciate you hopping on the call with me. I hope your start to the new year is going splendidly.
Trey, thanks so much for working with me. Yeah, everything great.
Good. I'm so glad to hear that. What did your New Year's look like going from, you know, another crazy year into what hopefully will, you know, be a little bit less crazy?
Well, I'm a very optimistic person, and I think I'm definitely pretty resilient. So it's, I don't know, I always look at the positives, and I see the beauty in everything, and every day I'm very grateful. Every day I wake up grateful. So, you know, I'm hoping that people start looking at the positives as well and in every day and keep moving forward.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, one of the messages I try to convey on this podcast is that if we can just have a conversation together like this, I mean, it doesn't have to be in an official capacity like a podcast. It could be a phone call. You could be sitting across from somebody. If you can just hear somebody's voice and sense their nuance and get an idea for where they're actually coming from, as opposed to just screaming at each other on the internet, we have such a better chance of actually finding common ground and connection. And just even if we don't agree with somebody, at least we can understand who they are as a human, as opposed to just some avatar online.
Sure, exactly. I mean, you don't have to have suffered trauma or crazy things. You know, it's just, I feel that, you know, we've all been through this collective grief these past couple of years. And, you know, we're all in pretty much in the same boat, really. So,
yeah, absolutely. Now, remind me where you're located.
So, I'm in San Francisco.
Okay.
And, yeah.
And where you haven't always been in San Francisco. You came to the United States from outside the country, correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Milan in Italy, and I moved to the States when I was about 20 years old.
Yeah.
And then I've lived in just a bunch of different places, but I've lived in 3 different states here in the States, and then I've lived in Africa as well as Central America.
That's amazing. You know, I will say this, and I you can probably sense a bit of shame in my voice. I haven't been many places, and I'd like to. Of course, I think a lot of people have that wanderlust, or that at least the dream of, you know, being a world traveler. You know, the extent of my travels is, you know, I've been all across the United States. I've been to the other side of the border in Canada, but aside from that, you know, I don't have a whole lot of worldly experiences. And I'm fortunate in the sense that I get to speak with a lot of people who have, and I can't really articulate it, but when you talk with somebody who has seen different areas of the world, they've seen different peoples, they've seen different sufferings, they've seen different types of prosperity, it's just they have a firmer understanding, a better understanding of who we are as a humanity. And I mean, I can, you know, from the little bit of time you and I have spoken, I can certainly sense that about you. I mean, is that, do you find that to be true versus, you know, people who have not traveled a whole lot?
I think so. When I was growing up, I always knew that I was not going to live there forever. Yeah. I always wanted to explore. I've always been a very curious and empathic person. And I'm an empath. So, and I grew up in a family that prioritized conformity and a lot of materialism. And so, yeah, I was always very open to feelings, and I'd absorb everything, the good and the bad. And what I experienced growing up was this negative power of what it means not to be able to use my voice or express myself and be open and vulnerable freely. And because vulnerability and openness were not a choice in my family.
Yeah.
And so I moved to the States in my 20s, early 20s, and I started a family and I worked in the archaeological field. I graduated in archaeology and art history to travel and explore the world. And pretty much, you know, Trey, the more I traveled, the more I realized the disproportion between rich and poor.
Yeah.
And the enormous differences between life in the so-called disadvantaged countries and our first world.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, having been unable to use my voice as a child growing up, I started volunteering and sponsoring children. And then I decided to become a fundraiser for various causes.
That's great. What I mean, you mentioned seeing that disparity between, you know, our country or first world countries and third world countries. People, I think, have an idea in their mind of, you know, what that disparity looks like. But even I think the media don't portray a realistic image. I mean, how jarring was that the first time you saw, you know, real poverty, not here in the United States?
Well, the level of poverty that you see in certain countries is incredible. For instance, in Malawi, I believe is the poorest country in Africa. And it's just incredible. You almost have to go and experience it because you can express it or try to express it as much as you can, but until you actually go and experience it, you won't really understand fully the capacity of their poverty and what they have to do to survive daily. And, you know, there's also a lot of prostitution because, you know, to try to make ends meet. And so, I being an empath, it was very difficult because you tend to absorb everything. So it was really, really difficult to see certain things. But there are pros and cons in being an empath. The pros is that you want to do something, you know, you want to, you know, take action. And so, I was able to do that, you know, I became this passionate advocate for traveling with a purpose and bringing aid to those who couldn't help themselves, people, communities, animals. And it was heartbreaking in the beginning, but then what I did was I learned to separate work from feelings. Okay.
Yes.
So the feelings are there, obviously potent. especially when you're working with children living in a rundown children's home, for instance, in Africa. And, you know, I remember, you know, seeing this home, their dorms were, you know, their beds were infested with bugs and, you know, there were, it was insane. It was incredible. And then, so when you come back and you realize how much we have here and how very little they have there in the material sense, you can't, you know, it's hard to describe. You just, it's almost like a shock to the system.
Yes.
And so when I came back from my very first trip to Africa, I knew that I had to do something. And I didn't know what it was, but I could not think about it.
Is that kind of when you started to find your voice? You know, I know our early childhood development and, you know, as those stories get written for us, I mean, those are the templates on which we use in our adult lives, and it can be so difficult to break free from those. So obviously something like seeing such poverty and tragedy to an extent in Africa, I mean, I'm sure that helped you really, you know, find or develop a voice to speak out and help other people.
Yeah, so again, after, you know, having been unable to use my voice as a child growing up, okay, so I started volunteering and sponsoring children. I've been sponsoring about 50 kids over the past 18 years. And then I became a fundraiser for various causes, including animal welfare. And then I got into nonprofit ethical photography. And so, again, one of my passions is definitely traveling, but I turned that traveling into traveling with a purpose. And so, you know, instead of just going to, you know, a beautiful resort and hanging out, you know, I realized that there's so many places in the world where you can not only go and help out, but, you know, you can go and learn about their culture. You can still have fun. It's not that it has to be a traumatic experience or anything, but, you know, you can connect with the locals. You can go and have fun. You can learn about their culture and really try to understand what they need, you know, what they need and what and connect on a human level. Yeah. And so I also started writing about my experiences working with this children's home and the children I have been sponsoring throughout these 18 years. I wanted to capture stories of resilience, grit, perseverance, and authentic human connection. Because one thing that I learned there in a lot of these countries was their sense of community is incredible. Like they all have each other's back. And something we don't really find here, you know?
Yeah.
They prioritize that over materialism. And so that's one thing that is still shocking to me every time I come back.
So why do you, I mean, I know you kind of gave, you did give somewhat of a reason. I mean, why do you think it is that they prioritize community over materialism? I mean, is it because they have less access to material goods, or is it because they truly internalize what it means to be a part of a community and to have to be able to defend each other, either physically or emotionally, mentally? I mean, what is it about their particular culture that says community first and material is, you know, it's not even important to us?
Well, all of the above, I would say, you know, there's not, you know, where there's poverty, there's not much materialism, of course.
Right.
So they try to really support each other within the community. And also, if, you know, when you're a foreigner, a lot of times they'll try to include you within their community. Sometimes they'll sleep on the floor and make you sleep in their bed so that you're comfortable. And it's that power, that healing power of true human connection that I've experienced there that has really changed me. And you know, I realize how even small acts of kindness towards even a stranger can be so open, you know, eye-opening. And wow, you know, this is incredible what you're doing to me. You don't even know me.
Yeah. And I would like to talk more about that, because when we spoke initially, we talked briefly about, you know, how random acts of kindness can heal the world. And I mean, that seems very grandiose, but I mean, there's so much truth to it. I mean, just things that somebody can do for you, that it doesn't have to be the biggest gesture in the world, but these little things, like you said, you know, letting you sleep on somebody's bed while they sleep on the floor because they want you to be comfortable, just that has such a long lasting effect in your own life, and it allows you to branch out and do the same thing for others. I mean, have you seen a lot of that as you've traveled?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on where, but a lot of the countries where I've been, especially, so I've been to a lot of countries in Africa, in many countries in South America and Central America. And what I've learned is that human connection is what we all need to practice in order to collectively heal.
Yeah.
Human connection is always possible, I believe, if we stay authentic, if we are authentic and genuine, if we toss that mask, become vulnerable and show our weaknesses and pain, and realizing that we're all the same. Yes. Under the surface, regardless of bank account status or physical attributes, really there is no difference between you and I. And so in a lot of these situations, I've realized that random acts of kindness like these daily really create this form of human connection that you know, connect us all, that helps us heal our wounds and connect us with the world.
That's incredibly beautiful. I love that, and I wish there were more of that. I mean, I don't want to completely put down what we have here. I mean, we're fortunate in the sense that, you know, it's a first world country. We don't have nearly the same amount of problems that the rest of the world does, but you still watch the news and you get disheartened very, very quickly, because we all seem to be turning on each other. And that's scary, and it's sad, and it just makes us think that there's no reason to be kind to others, because nobody's gonna be kind to us. And I really wish we could rewrite that narrative. And I love hearing the experiences that you've had outside of, or all over the world, I should say, because, you know, I don't think it's sectioned off to just one part. So I'm very thrilled and hopeful to hear that. And I don't know, I mean, if you could instill some of those lessons that you've learned and, you know, offer it to the advice of Westerners, I mean, is there a message that you think could be easily conveyed, or, you know, even resonate with people here?
Yeah, one of the most amazing acts of kindness that I have experienced is when I was in Ethiopia 2 years ago, and actually it's almost 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And so I was in Ethiopia collecting stories of positive transformation for one of my books. And so I've written three books so far. Two are still, I'm still working on, and one is released today. But so this specific book, I was putting together stories of positive transformation from the locals in Ethiopia, in the rural portion of Ethiopia, south of Addis Ababa. And I was there in August of 2019, with a group of locals who were connecting me with other people living in the south, in the rural area.
Yeah.
And while I was there talking to these people and writing, interviewing them, I received a call that was turned out to be that changed my life. Okay. Yeah. And this is another one of those turning points that, you know, you think that your life is going a certain direction and boom,
right,
it changes your course again. So my older son called me and from the States and told me that my younger son had taken his life on the other side of the world. And of course I, you know, dropped everything that I was doing. I'm distraught. I don't know what to do. I'm there with locals who barely, you know, who understood English, but they didn't know what to do, how to handle me and how to handle the situation with me. And they helped me to find a flight to go back to the States. And turns out it's not just one flight. Turns out it's four different flights because I found something from that will go from Addis Ababa, the capital. Well, first I had to fly from the rural area to Addis Ababa and then Addis to Dublin, Ireland to Boston, and then finally home to Denver. So it was 35 hours by myself.
Jeez.
So nobody could come back with me because nobody had a passport. And there were no Americans with me, no friends with me. So I had to do everything on my own. And my tour guide said, listen, nobody can come back with you because nobody has a passport. And nobody can stay with you until your flight departs tonight. But there's a friend of mine who volunteered to be with you all day long until the departure.
Yeah.
And so speaking of acts of kindness, okay, this guy is a total stranger, amazing guy. His wife is very pregnant. She was due at any time. Like seriously, she was due within 3-4 days, something like that. And that he shows up, volunteers to be with me. Okay. And he says, Laura, I'll be with you and, you know, until departure. And you're talking 10 hours straight. So he right away holds my hand and he says, do you want to come to my house and meet my wife and meet my other kids? And I'm like, I didn't even know what to answer. I was just, you know, obviously in a different world of my own. And so he calls me sister right away. And he says, I'm your brother, you know, don't worry. He held my hand, Trey, 10 hours straight, all day long. Incredible.
Yes.
I did not end up going to his house, but because I didn't feel like it was right because, you know, I didn't want to intrude. So he decided to take me to lunch and he takes me to a couple of archaeological museums that day, knowing that archaeology was one of my passions. And so we hang out all day, okay?
Yeah.
And when it's time for him to drop me off at the airport in Addis, at the rural airport south of Addis, I asked him, I said, why did you do all of this for me? You don't even know me. And he said to me, he said, what do you mean you don't even know me? We're a brother and a sister. And he said, I didn't do anything special. We're a brother and a sister. It was my human responsibility. And of course, my eyes filled with tears. And so Trey, basically, it was thanks to his presence, thanks to his kindness, thanks to his words, that I was able to make it on that flight. Not that flight, on those flights.
Yes.
Because it was the hardest, most tragic, most traumatic day of my life. And had he not been there, there's no way. There's no way I would have been able to make it.
That's amazing. And I will be completely honest with you, as you were telling me that story, my eyes started watering myself because it's an incredible story. And I think it lends credence to, you know, there are great people out there, and I think they're more abundant than we give the world credit for. And it's they're there when we need them. And he was there for you when you needed him. And from what you've told me previously, you're still connected with him, right?
Yeah. So we exchanged our WhatsApps, and, you know, we talk maybe once a week, once every 10 days, because I've only seen him once. Yeah. He still does not have a passport, but I would love for him to come to the States. And in fact, I am putting together a TED Talk, and I would love to have him over and share the stage with him and That's really amazing. Talk about human connection.
Yes.
And, you know, how a random act of kindness can spark the healing power of human connection and how it can save a life. Because again, if you think about it, he said to me, I didn't do anything special, Laura. It was my human responsibility. Now, for him, it was nothing special. For me, it saved me.
Yes.
And he stayed with me. So again, it can happen to anybody. So if you're practicing these random acts of kindness, okay, in your daily life, it doesn't have to be anything grandiose.
Right.
You don't have to, you know, fundraise for an orphanage, or you don't have to do anything crazy, especially if you're not able to travel.
Yeah.
But you can practice that sort of service, acts of service in your daily life, even a small act of kindness. You don't know the magnitude
right.
of what your acts of kindness can produce or create or generate. You don't know. You have no idea. So again, it's, you know, he didn't think that he did anything special for me. It was life changing.
Yes. You know, what I really, I love his words. I love that he referred to you as brother and sister, and because that we're humans. We are connected in that sense. I think up until this very moment, the word brother has been not overused in my world, but the men in my life, especially the men that I've connected with on the podcast, we tend to call each other brother. And so mm-hmm. it's become kind of commonplace, and I haven't thought sure. much about it, but now hearing your story, it means so much more to me, because it's not just a term of endearment or friendship. We are the same, even though we have different paths in this life and we've had different experiences as humans. We are still having the one human experience, and it means the world to think about the fact that we're all connected in that, right? And it makes us feel, at least it makes me feel, just a little bit less alone and a little bit more loved. And I'm so thankful that you shared that.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, I realized that, you know, especially now after having been through the pandemic, because I went through, you know, while the pandemic came out, I was already going through the grief of my son's suicide. So
yeah.
You're talking about pandemic, which is collective grief, plus my own personal grief, which is, I would say, for a woman, for a mother, it's the worst type of thing that you can go through. And on top of that, there was the pandemic. So, you know, it's okay. I'm thinking, how did I heal myself? Okay. How did I heal myself from this? I'm like, there has to be a way to heal myself from the trauma that I've been through. And, I realized that I learned that recovery from this trauma of my son's suicide began the minute I received a random act of kindness from the stranger. Okay. So that he helped me tremendously to start this healing journey. And then when I came back, I practiced meditation. Okay. So I practiced TM, which is transcendental meditation. Really, it works really well for me. Also, I realized that each of us heals in our unique way. Okay. And therapy is not the best option for everyone. It's not the best option for me, for instance. And I've tried it, but it doesn't really work. for me, for the way I am. And so I realized that traditional treatment, you know, is not for everybody. And so when we are depressed and we're going through grief, we're going through trauma, practicing these simple acts of kindness towards someone else who is going through maybe a tough time can help us to heal ourselves. Yeah. It can remind us that we're all in the same boat, and that kind of, I would say, vulnerability opens us up to human connection and true healing. So if maybe therapy is not working for us while we're going through this any kind of trauma, it doesn't have to be what I went through. It could be anything. It could be divorce. It could be, you know, natural or artificial disasters. It could be anything that is traumatic in your life.
Yeah.
You know, if therapy doesn't work for you, try to incorporate practicing service towards others. It doesn't have to be, again, anything grandiose, but you can start here right now where you are. Okay. And it can be towards people. It can be towards animals. It can be, but you know, it raises the vibration of it raises your vibration and the vibration of your environment. It doesn't have to be anything big, just something small, that, you know, because even when we are depressed, a simple act of kindness towards someone else can remind us that we're all in the same boat, and then it can lift you up.
Absolutely. And I think it's extremely important to remember, you know, we talk about volunteering or, you know, giving our time to help others. And obviously the component of that is that we want to help others. I think it's important to realize that it's okay to feel good. It's okay to do these things,
right?
Not just because you're helping others, but because it makes you feel good. That's not selfish. There's absolutely no selfishness in that, because you're still giving your time. But we have to realize that it's going to help us as well. And that's equally as important.
Exactly. And, you know, it's let's call it a win-win situation.
Yes.
Okay. It's not something that you're doing for yourself, like you're saying, oh, I'm selfish. You're not. You're doing something that helps another, and it helps you at the same time, because it's all about win-win.
Yeah.
We're brothers and sisters, not in a religious way, not necessarily in a religious, I'm not religious,
right.
But I believe that, you know, under the surface, we really all need the same things.
We
all need the same exact things. And, you know, if you take away my, you know, my bank account or my status, who am I? If you strip me of everything that I have built on the surface, who am I? I'm not much different than you.
Right.
And that's something that I've learned throughout my travels. And it's something that this pandemic is really teaching us.
Yes.
That, you know, in the end, it doesn't really matter. It can hit anybody.
Yes. Yeah, that's that point is extremely important. So your book out today, 21 Olive Trees, I would love to talk more about that. And obviously, I think you told me previously it's dedicated to your son. And I mean, where I don't know, I know this is a loaded question, but where did this book come from? And, you know, what do you aim to accomplish, you know, through sharing it with the world?
Yeah, so 21 Olive Trees is obviously a book that I wrote in order to heal myself from the trauma that I had experienced. I've always journaled, and so it came natural to me to start writing about the experience. And also, for me, writing is very cathartic.
Yeah.
Because it helps to get my energy moving. Okay. I think that when we are in a lot of grief, grief is love that has nowhere to go. So basically, if we are able to express ourselves while we're going through our grief, in any way, okay. It can be movement. It can be exercising. It can be, you know, traveling. It can be, you know, all sorts of different modalities we can use for me, writing is very cathartic. And so what happened was, after I came back to the States, obviously, I realized that this healing journey had started with meeting the stranger. His name is Asefa. And then 5-6 weeks after being in the States, after I came back to the States, I started writing. So I started writing notes, poems, a mishmash of things to my son, okay? Just like pretending that he was there with me. My son was my soulmate. We were very close. We were extremely similar. So you're talking two empaths. He wanted to get into documentary films, and we wanted to work together in the nonprofit world because he could sense other people's suffering, just like me. It's like the same exact thing. But unfortunately, being an empath has its pros and cons. You know, if you have not set up your boundaries and your energetic boundaries, you're going to be absorbing everything, the good and the bad. And he was just like that. He would just absorb everything. And he was sort of like a sponge. So he kept telling me, "Mom, it's too hard. This world is too harsh. I can't make it." And I'm like, "Yes, you can. I'll be there for you. You know, we're going to do it." And anyway, when the call came, I realized that he had not realized that empathy is a gift. Yeah. So there's a certain amount of people who are highly sensitive in the world. And what does the world need right now? In my opinion, it does need high sensitivity, tenderness, love, compassion. These are all qualities that the world needs, because there's a lot of stuff out there that needs to be, that we need, you know, we need to correct. Okay. And he did not realize that his empathy was a gift. So he left without realizing that he had a gift, because empathy can heal. So anyway, I started writing these notes and poems, and little by little, a fable comes out, and then, you know, and then a letter. And then what happened was, I started meeting people who would read my material. And they would say to me, "Laura, this can be a book." And I'm like, "Yeah, right." I did not write what I was writing in order to turn it into a book, but it turned out to be a book eventually. And, it helped me to heal, but it turned out to be even more than a self-healing experience. It turned out to be something crafted to help others heal.
Yeah.
And so 21 Olive Trees, which is out today, A Mother's Walk Through the Grief of Suicide to Hope and Healing. Basically, it shows my process of going from the initial uncontrollable pain to all the emotions, to the acceptance, and eventually to the healing. And that I was really helped by the meditation very much. It's very important to rely on meditation while you're going through grief, because it reconnects you to the eternal you. And it reminds you that what you are experiencing on a day-to-day basis is basically what is on the surface, but you are eternal. You know, your spirit is really your reality. And so I wrote this book in a way to express that love, real love, does not die. And so, and how important it is to love each other in the world, and spread loving action, spread this idea that love is not that complicated. It takes you know, a random act of kindness to lift up another person. And you never know the magnitude. It could be a domino effect, just like what Asefa did with me. He helped me that day, and I ended up writing a book that hopefully will help out other people who are going through their own grief and dark moments.
I have absolutely no doubt it will. I mean, that is a message that so many people need to hear. And I mean, you can make the argument, especially in the past 2 years, but anytime. I mean, the loss that you suffered is unparalleled to anything else. And I'm fortunate that I've never had to deal with that sort of loss in my life. But I do know when you face tragedy, it's so, so easy and so tempting to feel like you're the only one in the world dealing with that. Right. And when you feel that way, it's just, it self-perpetuates it. And you compound your depressed states and the bad feelings, and it's a vicious cycle. And so knowing that you can break free of that and having the experiences of somebody else to listen and to relate with, it's that's so incredibly important.
Yeah. And what I would like to see is, I would like the audience, particularly the trauma survivors, okay? And again, it doesn't have to be the same thing that I went through, but any sort of trauma, okay?
Yeah.
I want the audience to feel that they can stop grieving and they can no longer feel stuck in their pain.
Yeah.
I want people to hear this tale of transformation of mine and understand that undergoing a traumatic loss through all the stages of grief, because the stages of grief are the same. It doesn't matter what trauma you're going through. Grief is the same, according to the Kubler-Ross model. You go through the same exact stages of grief. And so I would like the audience to understand that these five stages of grief don't have to end with the acceptance, which is typical of the Kubler-Ross model, but that it can continue to the healing portion. You know, it doesn't have to stop with acceptance. You can also go to healing. But learning how to step out of your own specific problem and to elevate your state of mind instead and understand that we really are in the same boat, that you're not the only one going through this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited for you to be releasing this book. I'm excited to read it myself. I did want to point out that you did receive an endorsement from Deepak Chopra, correct?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yes.
How'd you end up going through that process?
So I've been doing a lot of pre-marketing, And obviously finding him was not particularly easy. So I was able to talk to his publicist, and his publicist said, yeah, he'd love to read your book. And I got lucky there. And because it's just an amazing asset, and he loved it. He said, oh, this book is great. I highly recommend it. And he's also a fan of transcendental meditation. Yeah. I love the, and also he loves, he's very much into loving action. In fact, he just released a virtual event together with Marianne Williamson on how to practice loving action, which I'm totally about. And so I thought that would be perfect, perfect way of connecting based on the loving action and the meditation. We basically think the same. So,
that's incredible.
I feel that, my healing process, it continues to this day. I'm not saying that every day is perfect and every day is rosy, because it was way more fun when my son was around in the physical, of course. But I have gained this deeper awareness of what it's all about. That, again, if you're able to meditate and practice this loving action, and that will elevate your state of mind. And you realize that, one day we all die. And, when you reach a certain age, if you do reach the older age, and you look back at your life, will you say, wow, I have, I have helped a lot of people, or I have helped one person, or I have contributed, you know, to making it a bit kinder than the way I found it.
And that's so incredibly important to feel like you've left the world a better place than, you know, in which you're living in it. I know that's not everybody's goal, but I certainly relate with you I would love to be able to contribute in that same sense. I did want to ask, so I know you're currently working on your TEDx talk. Do you have a date for that?
No, I have, actually a lot of, I'm still working on my applications. There's a couple that, I'm thinking about, most likely it's going to be around July or August of this year. But yeah, it's going to be about the power of human connection, how a random act of kindness can save a life.
That's amazing. I'm so excited to read 21 Olive Trees and also see your TEDx talk when it comes out. That's I don't know. I love the message, and I am so thrilled that, I mean, I don't know. It's just the experience that you had and being able to hear it and be a part of it via conversation. It's extremely powerful and moving for me. So I very much appreciate your willingness to share it.
Thank you. Yeah. And I, you know, again, I think that, again, I've been through probably one of the most traumatic experiences. But, you know, again, I have had some of the most resilient people as my mentors. Yes. So after living, you know, for instance, the founder of this children's home in Africa, it's called Merciful Redeemer's Children Home. It's in the outskirts of Nairobi. I met with Mama John in 2018, very briefly. She passed away just 4 or 5 months after I met her. And she was probably one of my most amazing mentors, the most powerful mentors, because she was saving kids from the slums of Nairobi. And she was taking kids into her house, and her house was a small place. So she starts, you know, adopting these kids. And before she knew it, she had 5 or 6 kids in her small house. And so she started fundraising, and little by little, she creates a home. And then, you know, the home turns out to be 120 children. So, and, you know, and she kept going. And when I met with her, she was wearing this beautiful dress full of yellow flowers, big smile. And she had cancer when I met her. So she was terminal, but she would not stop smiling. She kept saying, love is all that matters.
Yeah.
And she said, you came to us, you answered a prayer, because she knew that, you know, she knew that I wanted to fundraise and help out through a friend of mine who lives in Nairobi. And she said, you help, you know, you answered our prayer. And you're our angel, she said. And I'm like, I'm no angel. But, you know, but I persevered because I saw in her eyes what it meant to her and what these kids meant to her. And, you know, it was her life. And so after meeting these people who are just so incredible and who won't give up, I'm like, wow, it's... You know, it's a beautiful world out there. And like you said, there are so many amazing people out there working behind the scenes, because, you know, what happens is when we follow the media, you know, a lot of the stuff is negative. A lot of the, you know, we tend to sensationalize things, and we don't really cover a lot of stories like these stories of resilience, of, you know, of overcoming the worst of the worst. And people do it. I'm the living example that it's possible to do it.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I heard or read something recently, which it tends to make sense when you think about the media. Obviously, they want viewership, but bad things happen in moments and good things happen over time. So it's so much easier to cover the bad things than it does to cover, you know, the building of a home for children, because that is a slow process, or the fundraising right. is a slow process. So, I mean, I certainly get it, but those are the things that we need to pay attention to so we can continue to, or at least retain some, if not all, of our faith in humanity.
Sure. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I know we're coming up on an hour here, but before we wrap up, I did want to ask, because it scratches an itch of mine. I don't think I've ever, either on the podcast or in real life, spoken with an archaeologist before. And I know this is going to be such a silly question, but you know, you see movies like Tomb Raider or like Indiana Jones, and just tell me the truth. I mean, they're not even remotely similar to real life archaeology, are they?
I mean, it can be.
It's, okay. It's,
what happens is you really go for the thrill of discoveries. A lot of times you just don't discover anything, but you know, sometimes if it's just discovering one coin that, you know, was minted during, I discovered one time when it was a coin minted in during the period of the Emperor Nerva. And it was in perfect condition. And I just could not believe it after days and days and days of digging. I'm like, it's just a coin, you know, you know, how many coins do you have in your pocket right now? You know, probably a ton, but you find a coin that was minted, you know, 2000 years ago. And you're like, whoa, it's the thrill. And it's the research behind it that is just fascinating.
That's incredible. So when you go on a dig like that, I mean, do you do that with the intent of, you know, whatever you find going in a museum, or is that something that's added to your personal collection? Or I'm just curious how that works.
No, you don't do anything for your personal collection.
Okay.
Collection. No, it's always whatever you find, you know, it's either, you either photograph, or it ends up being in a catalog and ends up being in a museum, basically. So,
gotcha.
Yeah, but you know, like any pursuit, you know, it can get dirty, and you know, sometimes it's not particularly always exciting, but you know, it's overall it's fun, and it's the adrenaline behind
yes.
it.
And
you
that's
get
incredible.
To travel the world too. So
yeah. So it's a win-win there, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, Lauda, and did I say that correctly? Lauda?
Yeah.
All
yeah.
right, good. This has been such an incredible pleasure. I'm so thankful, one, that we even had the chance to meet, and two, that we got to have this conversation, and you know, as a bonus for all of the incredible things you're doing in this world. I can't thank you enough. Before I do let you go, I do have a few closing questions that I'd like to ask. And the first of which is, you know, I think this question is particularly poignant given all that you're doing and have done. I always like to know, what resources are you looking for so you continue your personal growth, your personal prosperity? And I ask that question in the sense that, you know, if somebody around the world or country is listening and they say, hey, I can help her, here's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, well, I, you know, I would love for you to take a look at my book, of course, and see my, look at my process of transformation, and, you know, realize that healing is possible from any kind of trauma. If you can go on my website, you can also take a look at the list of nonprofits that I currently support, and you can support them as well, because there's a link to their websites as well. So there's animal welfare organizations that you can support on there. There's I also work with Kiva, which is a lending platform. Even sponsoring a child. I work with Plan International. I'm partnering up with them to write a book on the positive impact of child sponsorship. So sponsoring a child will be another great opportunity to make the world a better place. And all the information is on my website.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you very much. And I will, of course, have all of those links in the show notes too, so people can find them easily. My next question for you, I always like to know, if you could name one book that has just had a profound impact in your life, what would that book be and why?
Yeah, so I love Michael Singer's The Untethered Soul. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful book about how to really live your life freely every day from the material constraints. And it teaches you how to really go beyond form and how to really stay, to always remember that you are spirit and go beyond form and to how to live happily. And that's a beautiful, beautiful book that I recommend to everybody.
That's fantastic. And you are not the first person to recommend that book. I've heard wonderful things. So that just goes to show that's it's definitely up on my list. So I appreciate you sharing that. And then last but not least, if you could leave the audience with a call to action, either one that you live your life by or one that you try to implore others to live their lives by, what would it be?
Well, I would say that, again, we can try to reestablish genuine human connection by practicing random acts of kindness every day and incorporating that into our everyday life. And, you know, my goal is to teach that anyone can practice this daily. You don't have to be rich or famous. We can all start right here, right now, and you will never know the magnitude of your positive actions.
Yes, I love that. Lauda, thank you so incredibly much. If people would like to connect with you, if they'd like to find you online, social media, your website, what is the best place for them? Where is the best place for them to go?
Sure. My website is lauraformentini.com. That's LauraFormentini.com. And I'm also on Instagram at author Laura Formentini. And 21 Olive Trees, Mother's Walk Through the Grief of Suicide to Hope and Healing is out today, January 11th. It'll be on Amazon, but also in all the bookstores. You can find it at Barnes & Noble and all the bookstores. So worldwide, as well as on the audiobook.
That's incredible. Thank you again so incredibly much. I can't wait for the opportunity for us to talk again. And I'm so appreciative of this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Trey. Thank you so much for working with me.
Again, I would like to express my sincere gratitude for Laura joining me on the podcast. Her brand new book, 21 Olive Trees, is out today. Tuesday, January 11th, 2022. It is available everywhere you get your books, including Amazon and traditional bookstores. Please be sure to check that out. If you would like to learn more about Laura and see all of the incredible work she's doing in this world, please check out the show notes at themosaiclifepodcast.com, where you can find her website as well as her social media links so you can connect with her and say hi. If you enjoyed this episode of the Mosaic Life Podcast, I would be incredibly grateful if you would leave a 5-star review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or both if you use both. That helps me, that helps the podcast continue growing, and of course, I am incredibly grateful for anyone who takes the time to do so. And thank you so, so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the podcast. It means the world to me. I hope your 2022 is off to an incredible start. I hope you've resolved to do better in your own life this year. And if there's anything that I can personally do for you to help you in your journey, please don't hesitate to reach out. Thank you all again so much. And until next time, take care, do better, and be well.